Broadcasting from an art walk where we realize we're the exhibit, it's the Funk Zone Podcast with your host, Ted Mills.
Why, hello, 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 folks. It is episode 33 of the Funk Zone Podcast. I indeed am your host, Ted Mills. And this week, we have Nathan Vonk, who's going to sit down with us at an episode recorded here at the 404, the studios of the 404. Nathan Vonk works at Sullivan Goss. You may recall a couple of weeks ago we interviewed Frank Goss, but Nathan Vonk is in charge of sculptures there, but also he runs the Santa Barbara Arts Blog, which you can find at sbartsblog.com. Which is sort of the one-stop shop over 8 years for seeing what is coming up in the week or the weeks ahead of openings and new stuff on the Sandbar art scene. He does it out of the goodness of his heart and to increase awareness of the arts in Santa Barbara. And I've known Nathan for some time. What we don't get into in the interview is that he is the man who knows his meat. I've been over to his the meat grinding party, where one time I made a very delicious combo of ground beef and ground bacon. I'm telling you, those were some of the best burgers that I've ever had. Ooh, sorry, trigger warning, vegetarians. I talked about grinding meat. Oh well. Anyway. We didn't get into the meat of the meat, but we did get into the meat of the art business and the art scene in Santa Barbara and what could be fixed. Oh, man, and what's awesome about it, and where are we going to go from here? So that's coming up in just a second. A quick note, because of last week, I didn't know I was doing this, but this week, which would be Friday the 22nd at the Arts Fund. I'll be hosting an arts talk, I think around 6 o'clock, maybe 5? Damn, I should have checked on my calendar. Anyway, it's sometime in the afternoon. A arts talk with the mentors at the Arts Fund. Quickly, the Arts Fund, one of the programs that it does is get kids who are artists and set them up with mentors, and they are treated like artists, not just like well done kids, but actually a serious artist, and they work with some of the most popular artists in town making their own work. So I'm going to sit down and talk to the mentors about their techniques this coming Friday, so stop by the Arts Fund for that. It's not really it's not a podcast. We're not going to record it, but who knows? Maybe some of the artists there will be on future podcasts. So come and see an version of the podcast that will be coming soon. Okay, just a quick shout out to me personally, funkzonepodcast.com if you haven't gone there already, and tedmills.com to look at my writing, Ted Mills on Twitter, and of course there's the whole thing of finding this show on iTunes. If this is not how you're listening to it, you can carry it around in your pocket. Listen to me while you walk. Isn't that weird? It's like I'm right next to you talking, jibber-jabbering about art while you go and do your chores. But hey, you know, don't have your headphones too loud when there's traffic around. Don't want to get hit while you listen to me. I'm not to blame. So, okay. I think I had to say I'm not to blame for legal reasons, but I'm not to blame. Okay, let's get right into this business with Nathan Vonk. Nathan Vonk, hello.
Hi there.
Welcome to the 404 Studios.
Hey, thanks.
Where we are hosting you for the Funk Zone Podcast. Welcome to my house.
Happy to be here.
Oh, cool. It is Friday, so yesterday was First Thursday.
That's right.
First question I'm going to ask and throw it out there. My impression was, or is, that First Thursdays are not as interesting as they used to be. There was not a lot of places to go and see. What is going on, or is that just me?
No, I don't think that's just you at all. I don't know exactly what's going on. Part of what's going on is that we're still reeling from a recession somewhat, and so some of the venues, the most interesting venues, are no longer around.
Mm-hmm. Are we talking about the recession of 2008?
Yeah. that one, like, a long time ago still.
Yeah, that one that was... But I thought we'd recovered from that.
Some degrees we have, and some degrees we haven't. You know, places like Jane Deering Gallery, you know, isn't around anymore. And she kind of came after the recession, but she did really interesting things. And not having her is a loss. Partially last night we suffered from cold weather. So people stayed home a little bit.
Yeah, windy.
It was windy, you know. It's like, oh, it wasn't perfect, so people stayed home.
That's right. Oh, there was a threat of rain.
Yeah, but also, yes. I mean, it is true that there just isn't that many places to go where you'll find interesting things. And I mean, some of the galleries have closed. The places I've actually had the most fun last night were the sort of retail places I wouldn't normally go to that had they're beautiful spaces and they had some decent art and it was just fun to be there. You know, they tended to be like jewelry shops and, you know, I don't have a lot of need to shop at jewelry shops frequently.
Yeah.
But it was really fun to go in there and fun to go in those places and see them and see what they had on the wall.
Did you go to Onward?
I didn't go to Onward last night, but I do often when I go out. That's a good example of a space, like, because I wouldn't necessarily go there frequently. But I mean, that's one of the fun for me of first Thursday when I'm able to go out and not be at the gallery where I work. It's the only time when I actually get to see what's going on, and seeing those alternative spaces are usually where I find the most interesting things.
Yeah, Onward last night, just by hanging out an hour. For an hour, ran to Dan Levin, Susan Tibbles, Sue Van Horsen, Gary from the Arts Fund. Yeah. It was just I just stood still.
What was actually there?
Just a collection of stuff. Yeah. Sue was playing her guitars.
Was she really cool?
Yeah, I mean, Dan still has a lot of his stuff that.
Yeah,
it wasn't an opening really. It was just come in and see all the interesting arts that they're selling.
Was that on the first Thursday map?
I don't know.
See, that's the other thing. Like, because I sort of. You know, have my finger in this sort of thing. Usually I have some idea of the things that are interesting that aren't like the sanctioned downtown organization stuff.
Yeah.
And last night I didn't know anything about, I did not have any of those on my radar. So we just sort of went down the map and hit the things that were there. Hmm. But again, like usually the things I find most interesting happen to be the things that aren't necessarily on the map.
Yeah. It costs to be on the map too.
Right. Exactly. No, I understand. I mean, I'm glad the downtown organization is there. I also understand that, you know, some places don't make it on the map for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Or places that used to be on the map.
Right.
Just don't think it's worth doing. So.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a difficult thing because for Sullivan Goss, we do it because on a good first Thursday, we'll get 500 people in the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like 40% of the month, you know, some regards.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us to sort of feel relevant and vibrant and get the energy from that. And so it's got a certain amount of value there. It's not something we do because it generates a lot of sales normally, but you know, it's a fun event. It gets people in the door. It reminds them that we exist. A lot of times it's the opportunity for us to sort of introduce the show to people so that we can help get the word out. And then, you know, the 60% of that come the rest of the month got it through word of mouth, you know, because of First Thursday.
Or, you know, what I do, I'll come back when it's less crowded because I actually want to look at the
art. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, time with it. It's definitely a social event and we would probably have better art viewing experience if we didn't serve wine, but you know, that's half the fun for a lot of people. You know, it's very much a social event, where they can hang out and meet the artists sometimes, you know, for lots of people, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good to have that opportunity.
Do you ever make sales?
Once in a while. I mean, like with Meredith Brooks Abbott, we had quite a few, but she's Meredith Brooks Abbott. So she's kind of the exception to the rule because she's so in demand. Other shows like, the show we do around the holidays, 100 grand, where we've got 100 pieces in one room that are all under $1,000. We'll maybe have 5 or 6 that night, maybe a few before the opening as well. But generally, no.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any last night to my knowledge. But that's not a huge shocker because, as you say, like if you're seriously into looking at the art, either come before or after that night because you're not going to see it well. So if you're thinking about making a purchase, it's generally not the best sort of buying environment. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not the point of the evening necessarily. Yeah.
So what's your official title over at Sullivan Goss?
I'm the curator of sculpture.
Curator of sculpture?
Mm-hmm.
Just sculpture. So, and it's Jeremy does the...
Jeremy's painting. The gallery director and the vintage curator, so he focuses on the older stuff.
Okay.
And then Susan is the contemporary curator, so she deals with most of the living artists.
Okay.
And I'm curator of sculpture.
Okay. You also host the Santa Barbara Arts blog.
I do.
Which is your one-stop shop for seeing what's coming in Santa Barbara. You try to get pretty much everything in there.
Well, I try. I mean, pretty much anybody that sends me something, the blog is really just a bulletin board. You know, I'm usually just putting up other people's press releases or announcements. But that was the sort of point of it originally, because why I started it was there was a show that was like, it was Joe Shea, Yosuke Yamamoto, and Tanner Goldbeck, who are like my three of my favorite Santa Barbara artists of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a show together, and I missed it. And like, I didn't know any of them personally at the time because I'd moved here recently. Mm. But still, it's like I'm one degree of separation from all of them. How did I miss that? Yeah. So I started the blog sort of to create this place where everybody could send me stuff, and I could sort of consolidate all the information and disperse it to the world. And it's still, that's its primary function. You know, there isn't a whole lot of other outlets for those sort of things that people, you know, you just subscribe to my blog and you'll get the email when I do it and you'll know what's coming up.
Yeah.
And yeah, so anybody that sends me anything, I try to get it out there.
Okay, so curator of sculpture, blog overseer.
Uh-huh.
What else? What am I missing?
I'm also the president of the board of the Santa Barbara Arts Collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
And our big project currently is we're working on the renovation of what's sort of known as the Solstice Building, which is on the corner of Ortega and Garden. And it's, there's two major main buildings there. One of them is nearly finished, and that'll get done right in time for Solstice to take over so that they can use the space. The point of what we're doing there is, as every year in the past, the years that Solstice got that space, they'd have to reapply every single year.
Yeah.
And whenever the city owns the property, and so whenever the city had another use for it, Solstice had to go looking elsewhere, and they were, you know, scampering around at the last minute to find a place. Mm. So what we're doing is sort of getting it so that they don't have to do that anymore, that they're guaranteed the space every year at the same time for the 2 to 2.5, 3 months, whatever that they need it for. And then for the rest of the year, the Arts Collaborative will find a way to use that building to help out other small arts organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be rehearsal space, it might be set building space, it might be workshop space, it might be exhibition space, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And we'll need to raise $2 million plus to do that. It's a big undertaking. It's much bigger than anything else we've tried to do, because we sort of were successful up to this point sort of going under the radar and just doing little things and getting it done and you know, connecting people so that they got where they were using resources most efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a big step up.
Mm-hmm. Are you modeling it on anything in other cities or something you've seen?
To some degree, yes. I mean, I don't have any specific examples, but I mean, it's sort of the thing that's rarest or most hard to come by for small arts organizations in Santa Barbara is space, mm-hmm. you know, because space is so expensive and they don't have the money for it. So this would be that sort of space, and it can be used however the community needs it most. It won't be free because it's got to pay for itself.
Yeah.
But it will be only as much as it needs to pay for itself, which opens up opportunities for a lot more sort of, you know, adventurous outings from other arts organizations.
Mm. Is it nonprofit?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a nonprofit.
It's a 501c3. 501c3.
Okay. 501c3 nonprofit. Yep. So, and your board of director?
I'm president of the board.
President of the board. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's ask about the status of art in Santa Barbara. Well, the good things. Let's do some good things first, right?
Yeah.
And then let's talk about the challenges. Let's not call them bad things. It's just the problems that we haven't figured out solutions to yet.
Right.
Okay. So what are the like, top three best things about art in Santa Barbara?
The top three. Well, there's an immense amount of artistic output from the community. Partially because the weather's so nice here, you know, you can go outside and paint 350 days a year. So lots of people do paint outdoors frequently. Mm-hmm. So there's an immense amount of artistic output for the size of the community. And that's really great. I mean, other good things, maybe the second great things, we have two really great museums. The Museum of Art here is totally, you know, way over the top what a community this size should have. Mm-hmm. And the Museum of Contemporary Art would also be the case. You know, like, it's really, really amazing that we have those two things, that we can go visit them. You know, we had the Titian and Botticelli in the museum for up until like last weekend, and I went to go see them. And, you know, the fact that we can get those things in a town this big is ridiculous.
Which I missed.
It was pretty awesome.
I went there last night, and it was like...
just closed
they had it open, and like, there was nothing to see. Yeah. Like, everything was down. It's like, please come see our remodeling.
It was pretty amazing. And I'm excited to see what they do with the remodel. Having bigger space, you know, it's like, they do really, really great shows there. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky to have that.
They have very good contemporary shows.
They do, yeah. I mean, and because the director there, Larry Feinberg, he's the sort of Renaissance guy, he did the Titian and Botticelli show. But Julie Joyce does a great job, too, mm-hmm. With her contemporary shows. And Karen Sensheimer does amazing photography shows. I mean, she's just a powerhouse. Their photography collection is really incredible.
Yeah, the Moon show was really good. Sorry you missed it, folks. So that was two.
Maybe the third, and I say this sort of tentatively, is the Funk Zone. I put that tentatively because, you know, it's being gentrified, and so the arts are sort of, the artists that have been there traditionally over the last, you know, couple decades are slowly getting pushed out because they can't afford it and those things. And that, I think, is really unfortunate. However, just the fact that there is an art walk there that's as vibrant as it is a really good thing. And being able to go, you know, every other month on a Friday night, walk around and see the diversity of the artistic output from the region or the stuff that's being shown there, is really, really great. It's definitely a really good thing.
Yeah. That's why that article was so disappointing last week, right? In the Times?
Yes.
was it LA Times, right? It was the New York Times.
It was a New York about New York creative class moving to LA.
No, not that one. No, the one about come up to the Funk Zone. Spent a weekend in the Funk Zone.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't even see that article.
And they went and interviewed a lot of people.
Did they really?
They interviewed people at Gone Gallery and a few others and stuff. And then there was no real mention about arts. It was all about
in the LA Times.
Drink some wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and that's the problem. I mean, that's the problem there. It's like I like wine as much as anybody, but wine vendors are always going to be able to pay higher rent than art vendors, you know. The markup on wine is way bigger than it is on art.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, more demand for it because you can get a bottle of wine for, you know, 20, 30 bucks, and you can get a new piece of art for, you know, $200, $2,000, $20,000, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the struggle there. I mean, that's always going to be difficult. But I remain optimistic. We'll see how the Mesa Lane Partners development goes. I mean, the Function Artist Village was a big flop, but, you know, you can't fault them for trying. They tried really hard to pull that off.
Yeah.
And the city just wasn't ready for it.
What's the next thing they're doing?
Well, it'll be a permanent project. And I mean, I've seen sort of very rough sort of schematics of what they're doing. But they do want to incorporate something like the Function Artist Village in the permanent project. It won't be sort of as rough and tumble, you know, as that was, I'm sure. But they definitely want to incorporate something like that in the space. And we'll see. I believe that they have the best intentions, but I also know that development in Santa Barbara is really hard, and sometimes you have to make compromises and jump through hoops and do things that you maybe didn't want to do just to get the project done.
Yeah. Wow. There's, you know, not just things like the Artist Village, but just even getting that hotel built down there. That's been going for...
Yeah, right.
It feels like 20 years.
It is. I think it is.
Is it 20 years?
I don't think that's too far off the bat. Yeah. I've been here for 10 years, and it's been a hole for 10 years that I've lived here, and I think it was a hole for quite a while before that.
Yeah.
But they're going guns blazing now.
Yeah.
And that'll be interesting. I mean, that will really, really change the neighborhood. It's hard to imagine or guess exactly what the impact will be on the rest, the sort of funkiness of the Funk Zone. Because so far, at least the new developments there have remained sort of unique in so far as like they feel more urban mm-hmm. and true to the funk zone in that regard, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas the La Entrada project is going to look like the rest of State Street.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
won't have the same character the funk zone
And it's has. Just condos, right?
Well, condos and hotel and you know, who knows what else. But yeah. I'm sure there'll be retail spaces too. But architecture has a lot to do with this sort of unique nature of the funk zone.
Quonset huts.
Well, yeah. For one thing, right. Yeah. I mean, they feel... it just feels more urban, and that has a certain psychological effect on the people there, you know, on both the people that live there and the people that are there to just wander around and shop and do whatever. It feels a little bit less parochial, and that's a really important thing, particularly in contemporary art, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're hoping that people are going to sort of feel as though there's a certain cachet for this art that's being produced in this town, mm-hmm. it has to feel like something that's not just a local, you know, there is a certain derogatoriness to being a local artist.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing actually wrong with that. But if you want to have a thriving contemporary art scene, you need people that both live here and visit here to think that the stuff that they're buying here is of a class that's not just local.
Yeah. Well, local is a derogatory word because I remember writing several publications and artists were like, don't call me a local artist.
Totally, right.
Yeah, do
right.
not call me a local artist, local filmmaker, local right. sculptor, local whatever.
Right.
Don't call me that. You know.
No, it's
local
it's
musician.
It's a label that people who aspire towards, you know, something greater certainly don't want.
Yeah. It's a pat on the head.
Yeah,
well, you're right. pretty good for a local artist.
Right, totally. Yeah, and that's that everybody wants to aspire to something bigger than that, and so that's a term that they don't want, you know, labeled at them.
Yeah. Okay, so what are the problems? Well, you know, funk zone, gentrification, definitely a problem. But again, as someone who sees the selling of art, that's your job. Oh, I should probably turn that alert off, that alert sound. Someone who sells art, what are the problems? Why aren't we selling more art? Why aren't people buying more art?
Well, exactly what we were just talking about. There's a certain cachet that's missing slightly from Santa Barbara. And I mean, in part, it's sort of counterintuitive, but at, you know, from Sullivan Goss, like we show, you know, not just local art, we show national art and regional art and historic art and all these things. But we're kind of the only people that do that to that level on that, you know, and we would actually be better off if we had two or three more places doing very similar things, because then it wouldn't just be us, and mm-hmm. people would start thinking of this as a destination for great art. And they do to some degree. If you're from the Midwest and you come to Santa Barbara, there's a certain cachet of buying something here because you got it in Santa Barbara. Mm. The problem we have is that if you live here, if you live in the hills of Montecito, there isn't necessarily that cachet. There is to some degree, but not as much as we would like. Everyone would be better off if somebody that lived in Montecito could impress their friends with what they got on State Street. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to be improved greatly. You know, the big picture, all the sort of extracurricular stuff I do outside the gallery is about developing that. You know, how do we make this into a place where people think of it as a really important destination for visual art?
Mm.
So that, you know, people from that live here don't drive to LA to buy the stuff to put on their walls.
Which is what they do. Frequently. Or they don't drive to LA. They send their buyer.
That also happens. Yes.
Come on now.
Yeah. And so that's part of it. We need to do that. One of the things we need to do that is get better public art. There's almost no public art in Santa Barbara, really.
No, we have no. And then when we do, everyone just spends all the time complaining about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem too. But I mean, I mean, people ought to get used to the idea that you're not going to like everything and you shouldn't.
Or you just wind up with just dreadful public art.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you're just trying to placate the lowest common denominator, you're not going to get things that are memorable, that impress people, that people come to see, or, you know, that they put on their itinerary when they get off the cruise ship or whatever.
Yeah.
You need to have a certain amount of those, and we don't have those, and it's a difficult thing. I'm not trying to say that this is a simple problem to fix, but it's sort of easy to point your finger at that specific thing.
Mm.
And some of that has to do with the recession and the loss of the redevelopment agency that used to fund sort of the temporary public art projects on State Street and things like that. Those don't exist anymore, and so the fund sort of dried up to do those things.
That was the one where the last time we had some really interesting public art, I think, was the
Colin Fraser Gray's.
Gray's.
Absolutely right.
Wheel of McDonald's with all the arrows in it, which was so good.
It was great.
What year was that?
That was shortly after I moved here, so it was like maybe 8 or 9 years ago.
Yes, right. So that was a long time ago.
It was a long
time
ago.
So there's no fun for that anymore.
My knowledge, no. The other thing that the other sort of hat that I wear is I'm also on the Arts Advisory Committee to City Council, which is the committee of people that sort of, you know, originally overviews the public art projects before it goes to City Council final, final vote. And, it's not as though we're turning down a lot of great, you know, potential projects. It's that not that many projects come up. But it is sort of, and one of the things that I've worked on that committee is sort of, simplifying the way in which you can have, you know, murals, for instance. There wasn't really a good sort of guidelines of like, if you want a mural on your project or on your property, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a sort of very clear, sort of as broad as possible, set of guidelines that you can follow to get, you know, a mural on your property. Like the Gator Boy mural, if they just done that, if they just jumped through the hoops, that probably wouldn't have ever made the papers.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Gator Boy, by the way, for people listening, was just really a stencil. It was a stencil of a boy riding a gator that was put on the back of Cajun Kitchen Cafe just up the road here. And suddenly there is a shitstorm about it. Why exactly?
It made this big kerfuffle because they didn't get permission. There are certain people.
But it's their building, right? No?
Yeah, but because they're in the downtown district, they can't do that without getting permission. And even though it was one of the least offensive possible, you know, murals.
And it was on the back.
And it was not easy to see.
Parking lot.
There are certain people that are just sticklers for the rules. And when I see something like that, like, oh, you didn't follow the rules, I'm going to raise a red flag.
Yeah.
And that's not really productive. It's not helpful. It could have been handled differently. That's really frustrating. And certain things then happen, like the David Flores mural that's on the back of the Church of Skatin.
Mm-hmm.
That they didn't go through the right channels there either, really. But it's such an important piece of public art. I mean, I would argue that it's the most important piece of public art that's happened in Santa Barbara in at least the last 10 years. They sort of got forgiven, you know? I mean, they sort of had to, you know, say, oops, sorry. And
explain why you think it's the most important.
Well, David Flores.
Describe it a bit for us.
Well, it's a picture of Max from Where the Wild Things Are. It's 3 stories tall, and it's in the sort of iconic style of David Flores. David Flores is a Santa Barbara guy who has gone way beyond that and is now doing murals all over L.A. I mean, he's done like dozens of things all over L.A., important pieces. And he's now, I mean, he's going international. So he's the sort of biggest deal to come out of Santa Barbara in a long time. I would guess that maybe the majority of people in this town don't even know who the guy is.
Yeah.
And
that's the thing. If we ask him, hopefully he'll be on the show one day. But if we ask him, what did Santa Barbara do for you for your art career? He may not have anything.
I don't know. I was first introduced to his work. I think he was one of the very early muralists of the Amass Gallery that Laura Ingalls did, and he did like the bee from The Simpsons on one of the big panels.
Yeah.
And that's where I first saw his work, and I don't remember seeing it elsewhere, but that's certainly where I was introduced to him. And you know, then I just started following him online, and the things he's doing, you know, are just they're massive. They're big projects. You know, the fact that he's making a living with his art alone is heroic, because that's so difficult to do.
Yeah.
But he's also having an impact and beautifying spaces and buildings in a way that's, you know, gonna outlast him, and that's, I mean, why don't we have more of that?
I don't know. So does Santa Barbara need a visionary person to come along, or is there or has there been one, and they are just, you know, squashed by bureaucracy and NIMBYs and all that?
I don't know. I mean, and the reason I say I don't know is because I don't know exactly the people, like officials that have sort of a certain level of power. I don't know exactly how strapped they are for resources. I don't know exactly how hard it is for them to do specific things.
Hmm.
Do we need a visionary, though? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would never hurt. You know?
Yeah.
How that person goes about getting things done is a real question. I mean, because it's difficult to do things. There is a lot of bureaucracy built into Santa Barbara. There are a lot of you know, Ed haters out there in the world who go on Ed Hat and then yeah. you know, just are trolling, you know, with negative comments about this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah,
that makes things difficult. I mean, they're just curmudgeons. But you know, it's sort of I from my perspective, it's like you just fight the good fight and keep going and hope that sort of the effects of the fight are beneficial in some way, even if you don't actually achieve the specific end goal that mm-hmm. you were after.
Are we talking about liberal or conservative?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it necessarily matters.
Does it come down to that at all?
I mean, maybe. I suppose I would generalize by saying liberal people tend to be into the arts more than conservatives, but that's not necessarily the case, and I would say that there's a fair amount of conservative people out there that fund an extraordinary amount of art stuff, you know? Mm.
Well, I'm just thinking about the divide in Santa Barbara when we see the big names.
Uh-huh.
Are we talking liberal cash or conservative cash?
I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know. No, yeah, I mean, I really don't. I don't like politics very much, so maybe I just sort of ignore them just enough to not know. Yeah. But also, I mean, there are some usual suspects out there that fund the vast majority of the big art projects that go on in town. But most of those are performance arts, you know, like the Granada and mm-hmm. the New Vic and those things. Like, those are awesome.
Yeah.
And they have their own challenges that are very different from the visual art challenges. Because it's not as though, you know, you can have a donor that's going to, well, I guess you kind of will, like the Community Arts Workshop will sort of be like that, you know, mm-hmm. like that'll require some big donors to sort of create a venue that will then go on, hopefully funding itself and, you know, being a good community resource in that way. But, for the visual arts, it's sort of more of like a, I don't know, microtransaction or something like that, because for a commercial gallery or for an artist who's making and selling their own work, you need people to just buy their what they're producing, you know?
Yeah.
Not buy a ticket to an event, but actually buy an actual object.
Yeah.
And that's a very different thing. You know, there's a certain amount of people who will pay a certain amount of money to go see, you know, the LA Philharmonic when they come up like they did last week. Mm. Or to see our own, you know, concerts in the Granada. But it's a different thing to sort of go into a gallery and think, oh, I want that in my house. I'm going to buy that.
Yeah.
And we need more people like that. And sort of we need to find out, you know, how to get people to think about doing that as soon as they get here, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah.
Well, let's say we took someone from Montecito,
mm-hmm.
not forcibly, obviously, but let's say we took someone from Montecito and brought them. And what do you think they would say about the situation of art in Santa Barbara if you said, well, why aren't you buying? Why aren't you? I don't want to say support local artists, but I mean, it does come down to that in a little bit, doesn't it?
Really? In some regards. Yeah. I mean, well, it's funny because one of the last things I read on Ed Hat was the sort of response to the new mural that's on the side of the Indigo Hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And of course, there are people, you know, complaining about this, that, and the other thing about it. But one of the reasons I almost put up a response of my own was that somebody was complaining. It's like, there's so many local artists that could have done that. Why didn't you choose somebody local?
Okay.
And that's a good question, but there's a good answer to that too.
What is that?
The answer is that by bringing in somebody like that artist whose name escapes me, but she's a Harvard trained artist, very accomplished. Mm-hmm. She's a good artist. By having somebody like that in that town, in our town, mm-hmm. everybody else that's making art around it or near it gets elevated.
Yeah.
Because she's not just a local artist. You know, she's a national artist. And so having a certain amount of that, which we need a lot more of, elevates everybody else. And yeah. So that's the reason. I mean, we should have some murals by local artists as well, but it can't all be, because then you really are just doing the feedback loop of local. And mm-hmm. the arts should be thought of as an ecosystem. You know, you need everybody from the ants crawling the ground to the you know, canopy. You know, big A, small A, and everybody in between has to be functioning as well as possible for the whole thing to thrive as much as it can.
Yeah.
So you can't, it can't be just one thing. You've got to have a diversity of styles and locales, and they have to come from everywhere. And so having that space on the side of Indigo feeds is a very unique function within that ecosystem.
Hmm. Now, I want to go back, as you've mentioned several times, when you came to Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your bio? Where are you from originally? Where are you born?
I was born in a small town in Iowa, Mount Vernon, Iowa. I grew up on a farm 4 miles outside that town.
Wow.
on a gravel road.
Wow.
And it was uphills both ways to get into town.
Uh-huh.
Because we lived on, you know, I was fairly flat, but the town 4 miles away was on a hill, and I lived on a hill.
Yeah.
And so we had about 11 acres and some chickens and a big garden, and it was a great place to grow up, corn in every direction, you know. But it was beautiful, and there was a small college in my town, so it was a little bit more sort of sophisticated than an average town of 2,000 people.
Yeah.
It was a really, really nice place to grow up.
Was your dad the farmer?
No. I mean, they were sort of like, you know, tail end hippies, sort of a little bit.
Tail end hippie. What, well, I mean, like the end of the '70s.
Yeah, and you know, so like yeah. They were, I mean, they liked having a garden and being sustainable, and you yeah. know, like we did canning and we made our own pasta. It was sort of like, you know, it's come back around that all that stuff's very fashionable again now.
But with bigger beards and, yeah, right? and more mustaches. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. No, my dad was he was a county administrator working with troubled youth, so he worked in the juvie. When I was young, and my mother was a travel agent who ended up like having her own travel agency and had a sort of / gallery travel agency. So she had art on the wall that she would sell out of her travel agency.
So you grew up with art on the wall?
A little bit, like, yeah. Like, yeah, like my who? Parents always took me to museums and things.
Who was on your walls?
Turner. I mean, there were posters and stuff, you know, yeah, but yeah. like Turner, I had a big Turner poster that I had gotten in London when we went to go visit. And that's the thing that like really stuck with me. But who else did I have? I don't know, weird stuff that I can't really put a finger on. And I liked performance art, too. I was really into musicals and Phantom of the Opera and all that stuff when I was in, you know, junior high and high school.
Were you going to be in the theater department?
I was. Oh, yeah. I was an all-state choir kid my junior year and did all of the musicals. My sophomore year, I had a really big part in Annie Get Your Gun.
Which one? Which part?
I was the, I don't remember the name of the guy, but it was her agent, who's uh-huh. actually like I had the largest role. It wasn't the lead role, but I was in every scene. And after that year, I decided that was a little bit too stressful. I liked being behind the scenes better. So I sort of progressively got smaller and smaller roles and did more and more behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
which was great. But then by the time I was 18 or so, I was ready to get as far away from Iowa as possible.
Mostly why?
I don't know. I mean, everyone where I grew up was very similar to each other. So yeah. the diversity in my high school was basically zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the smaller differences between everybody were sort of magnified so that people could, you know, have little cliques and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like the high schools, I think, in larger high schools. There was only 350 people in my entire high school.
That's really small.
It was really small.
But that should have been, I don't know, in some ways nicer than the usual high school experience.
I don't know. It was the only high school experience I had. So it wasn't terribly bad, but I don't think it was abnormal for, you know, a person to just be ready for something new.
Yeah.
And so when I visited colleges, the college that struck me most was Reed College in Portland, Oregon. And partially I just liked the fact that it was in a city. But also I sat in on a class that they were arguing Plato's Republic, and like people with like piercings and mohawks were like eloquently talking about Plato's Republic, and I was like, wow, I gotta go there. And I went there, and I was a straight guy, right? I didn't have mohawks or piercings or like things. I was just sort of like, kind of how I'm dressed now, jeans and flannels and stuff, right? Yeah. but it was a great experience, and I loved Portland, and it's still my favorite city in the country. And it was a great space. And then from there, I went and got a master's degree in Brighton, England. And that's where I started getting into art, because I was so poor at the time that, you know, the cheapest way to spend a Saturday was to get a train ticket, which was, you know, like £12 round trip. And all the museums are free. So I'd pack a lunch and I'd, you know, maybe get an art magazine and I'd read it on the hour train right up there. Go to the National Gallery, go to the Tate Britain, where all the Turners were, go to the Tate Modern.
How far is Brighton?
It's about an hour train ride.
About an hour.
Yeah. It didn't seem far. It was perfect to, like, you know, read an art magazine or see if I could find out, you know, read something about the stuff that was going on in London that I might see that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would do that, you know, almost every weekend. And you know, if I had a little extra money, I'd get an audio tour. Mm-hmm. And just sort of learned it that way.
Wow, you must have saw some good stuff. What years are we talking?
2003, 2004.
What was because the Tate Modern has
the Tate Modern has that big, huge, like, space. And when I was there, it was an installation by Olafur Eliasson. I may be butchering that name, but it was like an indoor atmosphere with clouds.
Yeah,
you know, it's sort of like they pumped in like this vapor that, you know, and the space was big enough that actual, like, sort of cloud formations would form inside the building, and you just stand there and look at them, and the ceiling had been mirrored, so the space actually looked twice as big as it was, and there was half a sun at the bottom of the mirror, so with the mirror it made a perfect sphere, it was just a perfect yellow. It was really intense.
Yeah. I so wanted to see.
Yeah, it was really neat. And there was a Sigmar Polk exhibition there that I went to. It was a really great experience. I loved London. I loved living there. I loved living nearby and just being able to go there. Brighton's a great city, too.
Mm-hmm. What were you studying at Brighton?
I was studying, it was critical theory and literature, so it's just lit theory. Oof. I was studying, like, postmodern literature.
Oh
yeah, fun stuff.
Can you write that? Are you pretty adept at writing?
Like creative writing?
No. Like critical theory.
Yeah. Stuff. I mean, that's what I'm trained in. Yeah, really? Totally. I mean, that's why it was. I mean, what I was studying was so sort of theoretical that it's very easy. It was very easy to switch over to visual art, right? Because it's sort of you just change a couple of words and you're still talking about similar things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost just philosophy, and you just pick which medium you want to talk philosophy about, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was an easy transition.
Who's your favorite postmodern critic?
Critic?
Yeah.
Well, if we're talking about art, it's Dave Hickey, without question. I mean, like...
See, the thing is, Dave Hickey doesn't write like...
No, I know.
You can sit down and breeze through... That's why I like him.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's more subtle than that, because like, if you pick up Imagine the Dragon... you read it and all the words make sense. It's not like it's confusing, but to get what he's talking about, you might have to read it two or three times.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I say he's my favorite, but it's not like I say that because I agree with him all the time. I say that because I love reading his writing, you know, even if I totally disagree with it sometimes. I mean, sometimes I agree with him, but not always. But man, he's entertaining to read, you know, and the fact that he can be entertaining and say such things that say the things that are so complex and interesting and intellectually stimulating, is pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's totally a rare bird in that regard.
So you finished up, Brighton and then came back.
Okay.
To the States?
Yeah. So it's weird the way it happened. I left Portland and was going to drive myself and all my things back to Iowa to drop them off with my parents, and decided to make a detour through Burning Man. I knew one person at Burning Man. She just told me this big, long story, and I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. And she had left Portland she was from Camarillo originally, so she came down to live with her family after college and had hooked up with a Burning Man group here. And so... I showed up at Burning Man, had no idea what it was about.
What year is that?
2002 or 2003.
Yeah.
And then showed up at this camp, which was a major camp on the Esplanade. That was my first burning experience.
What was your camp?
It was with Clandestino.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we had aerial stuff going on, and the Mutator played there. And I more or less had my mind blown about it. Mm-hmm. And so then I left Burning Man, drove to Iowa, dropped all my stuff off, flew to England, got my master's degree in 9 months. And I flew back to Iowa and finished my dissertation there, picked up all my stuff, went to Burning Man, joined that group again, and then just continued to Santa Barbara because I didn't have any other plans to do. So I was like, oh, well, they're from Santa Barbara, so I'll just go there. I mean, how bad can it be? Santa Barbara, right?
Right.
And it was right. You know, it was great.
Yeah, Burning Man, apart from all the other things that it's good for, is some of the best public art you're going to see.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can do whatever you want.
And totally.
There's no councils to go through.
No, absolutely. I mean, there was some art pieces there. I was just like, who does this? It's like, this is only going to exist for a week to 10 days in the middle of nowhere where, you know, 40, 50,000 people will see it once, and then it'll be gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
You can't purchase it. You know, you can't do anything. It's just like a temporal thing where you experience it or not. You're either there or not. I mean, in that regard, it's sort of like the only other experience I've maybe had that's sort of similar is when I went to see the super group, Monsters of Folk at the Granada.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you see a concert like that, and at some point you realize, like, wow, I'm never going to be able to have this experience ever again. This is a one-time thing. And when you realize that, it sort of elevates the whole thing because you're aware that how unique of an experience you're having as you're having it. And Burning Man, something like that, when you're having a good day at Burning Man.
When you're having a good day.
Everything just blows your mind, you know? Yeah. And it's like... Yeah. Everything you're encountering is like, it's so strange and weird and awesome, you know, and you're there and it's going to be gone and you'll never have that experience again.
It's one of the few places where artists and sculptors can play with distance.
Yeah, right.
There's no other place, really.
Right.
There was the one year I went, there was all these gigantic children's blocks.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one? So... I walked around thinking, and you'd occasionally come across another one, all different sizes. Some were up in the air on poles and stuff. And it was only when I got back did I realize you had to find the one place where the perspective would render them all the same size.
Oh, right, right.
And they'd spell a message in this sort of rainbow.
I wasn't there that year, but I saw pictures. Yeah.
And you go, there is no other place in the world where you'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's maybe we should just get all these city council members and get in the RV, man. Let's just do it.
Maybe.
Let's set up Arts Council Camp.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of creating something memorable is something that the people who control whether we not have public art or not in our town aren't particularly good at.
Mm-hmm.
The things that we have are nice. They're not ugly.
Yeah.
But they're very forgettable.
Yeah.
And that doesn't do anybody any good, you know, it's just that it's not offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And having things that people remember when they leave Santa Barbara has an incredible amount of value, because they're going to go home to, I mean, when you walk down State Street, most of the people on certain times of year aren't speaking English. They're speaking whatever language they're from, you know, frequently Europe or South America or whatever. If you can create something that they're going to go back to their home country and tell their friends about, like, that's a bonus. And we are not doing that very well, at least insofar as visual arts is concerned.
Well, think about like what we were talking about before we started recording, which is my trip to Philly.
Right.
I came back blown away by certain things I saw in Philly and around Philly. And that's all I want. That's the memories of the trip to me.
Like, I've heard you mention it two or three times. So yeah, it was, I mean, it had exactly that effect. Exactly what I'm talking about happened with your trip to Philly.
Yeah.
And I want that to happen with people who visit Santa Barbara more than it's happening now.
Yeah.
You know, Santa Barbara builds itself very well. And most of this is through the Visit Santa Barbara, you know, people. They do an amazing job with, you know, beach, wine, wedding, food, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm.
We need to find some way to be that good with visual art.
Mm.
And I don't know how we do that exactly, but...
I was just about to ask. And we're working on it. How do we do that?
We're working on it.
Okay.
There's a group, a group that I'm a part of that's working on building creative capital in Santa Barbara. Just people that are, you know, interested or, and involved, you know, this is how they make the living like I do, in bumping up exactly what I'm talking about, the cachet. How do we, you know, make this a place where the arts are everywhere and parts of everybody's life? And the group at this point is just like, let's figure out exactly what it is, where we're at right now, so that we can start making up the questions that you need to ask so that you can get to the solution that you want. And it's a 2 or 3 year thing, I would guess. And then eventually, you know, you might come up with this sort of, you know, maybe you present some sort of legislation to the city where, you know, there's a percent for the art, or maybe you raise some money to find this visionary person and make it their full-time job to do this, you know, so that they can, you can pay them to just do that. Because right now, I mean, even if we found that person, how would we get them, you know, how would they make a living doing that? I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's being worked on. There are people working on it, and it's exciting. I'm optimistic. But there's a lot of work to be done.
Hmm. Do you feel that in the coming years, though, in Santa Barbara, we're going to see even more galleries close? Is it going to get harder?
What's going on? I don't know. I'm hearing all these horror stories from around the country. My family lives up in Northern California, and they said 3 galleries closed in a month in Sacramento. Santa Fe has been hit pretty hard, because Santa Fe was the largest art market west of the Mississippi.
We kind of compare ourselves to Santa Fe, I think.
In some regards.
In terms of size of population and art scene.
Yeah. But I mean, we think about compare us to like Carmel. Mm-hmm. You go visit Carmel and you're like, how in the heck do these guys have this many galleries? How is this possibly sustainable? You know, there's like a gallery, like there's like 4 galleries on every block. It's crazy. And I don't know how they do it. I mean, and it's not like it's all great art, but you know, as I said, like, you know, you need to have a diversity, and it's a good thing that not everybody likes the same thing, because otherwise art would be really boring.
Yeah.
But whatever they're doing, like, we're not doing anything like that. And in the next couple of years, part of what's being, it's becoming more and more difficult to have commercial gallery space because of things like the internet. You know, you would think that most people aren't going to buy their art online, but you know, 10 years ago, you would have said people aren't going to share as much of their lives on the internet as they do because of Facebook. And now it's just like second nature that people do that.
Yeah.
My prediction would be that art's going to be more, it's going to go that way with art. Like in 10 years, we'll think, oh, they're buying pieces of art online. That's not a big deal at all.
Mm-hmm.
In some regards, it will be with historic stuff, you know, with impressionist work, you're probably going to want to see it in person, because it's a lot about the texture of the paint on the surface, and you can't reproduce that on a computer screen. But a lot of the art that's being produced now, it doesn't look that different on a computer screen than it does in real life.
Yeah.
And so people with retail gallery spaces have to compete against that, and that's hard. So I don't know. It's hard to say whether locally we will have more or less. We're in a little bit of a microcosmos here, you know, that we've got, you know, who knows how many billionaires within a 10-mile radius of us. So we're different than most places in the country. Yeah. Thankfully. But
with all those billionaires within a 10-mile radius, we have all these problems.
Yeah, no,
it's the thing that I'm sure that baffles you. That's why we're having this conversation.
It does. I mean, because, you know, to get back to the cachet thing, it's a parable that I don't like talking about, because I think it's true, but I don't want to spread it. You know, that you could put something in a gallery in Santa Barbara and then clone that thing, put it in a gallery in Culver City, mark it up 15-20%, and people in Montecito would drive to Culver City and pay more to get it there.
Yeah.
That has to stop. Like, that's not a good thing. You know, because we have all these people that can afford a really nice art collection, but they have to be impressed with what they can find here in town, both that's produced here, what's, you know, eventually comes here into the galleries from elsewhere in the country, whatever it is. And the more places that we have that do that, the better for everybody that's trying to do that.
Yeah, but the trouble is, as you say, the three artists you mentioned at the beginning of this story, Joshe, Yosuke, and Tanner, they've all moved.
Yeah,
right. And they've all moved down to LA. That's another Culver City.
That's another thing that's problematic. It's really, really hard to make a living as an artist. Period.
Yeah,
it's even more so to do it in a place that costs as much as Santa Barbara. So there's sort of a talent drain out of town because yeah. a lot of people reach the age of about 30 and they're like, oh, I'm kind of an adult now. I need to figure this out. So I can yeah. either get a real job, do art on the side and stay in Santa Barbara, or I can move somewhere where there's a much higher potential that I can support myself with my creative output.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to make that choice. So people leave town because there's greater opportunity elsewhere because the cost of living is less and there's more people that actually buy their stuff there.
Yeah.
That I would love to be able to change that. It's a really sad thing. I mean, it's really heroic to try to make a living as an artist and it's really, really hard. But doing it in a place that costs so much is just really difficult. And so, you know, as with all three of those artists, you know, they've left town for sort of greener pastures.
Yeah. You've never tried your hand at art, or have you?
Not really, no. I mean, I did up until maybe the age of 9 or 10, realized I was crap at it, and I stopped. It's like my grandfather was an artist. My sister is actually a really good artist. And I could see in other people that, like, oh, it comes very easily to them. And it's very, very difficult for me.
Yeah.
So maybe I should try my hand at something else. I mean, as I said, I did theater and some singing.
Mm-hmm.
But going into college, I started in physics and chemistry. Mm. I was much more into science than I was into art originally. And even now that I've, you know, made the transition, the way I approach art is still like, my degree is in theory. So I'm very analytical about how I look at, talk about, and critique art anyway. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of creative gumption, you know? Like, I don't feel like it's missing from my life. I don't feel like it's a need that I have. The things that I do in art, I feel incredibly fortunate for. And, it's like I have a great job that I love and I get to be around art all the time and talk about it. So I'm pretty happy with that. Though I'd like to be happier still, sure.
Well, of course. But if you had one artistic skill, if you could like just get one, wake up in the morning and have one artistic skill, what would you choose?
Probably drawing. I mean, it would be really nice to be able to just sit down and think about something and then draw it. And that's exactly what I can't do. My wife can even do that. She can just sort of like pull something out of her mind and put it down on paper and it looks pretty darn good. Yeah. I can't do that at all. One of the artists that we show at Sullivan Goss is this guy named Alan Linder. And he's a sculptor and we have a few of his sort of small figurative pieces in the gallery. And sitting down with him when he brought them to the gallery, what blew my mind is that when he sits down to start the process of making these things, he has no preconceived notions of what's going to come out. He just sits down with his block of clay or plaster or whatever it is and just sort of goes.
Yeah.
And these awesome things come out. And it's like, what? That is so amazing. Yeah. I don't, whatever that is, I don't have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, so if I could like just drawing, and I picked drawing probably because I think it would be something, it's so easy to do. You know, you can just, all you need is a pencil and paper.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it anywhere. You can do it any time. You can pass the time with it. You can be listening to awesome tunes while you're doing it. You know, that would be amazing.
Mm. And you also collect art.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I have a pretty big art collection. I mean, and I have a pretty big art collection in part because I know so many artists that I frequently am sort of like the liquidation call, you know, like... I'll tell, you know, if an artist, if I go to a show and I see a piece that I can't afford by an artist, I'd be like, you know, I love that piece. It's just, it's awesome. You know, maybe 2 years down the line when they're moving their studios and they don't want to lug it to their next place, they'll call me up and say, hey, you want this at a discount? And if I can afford it, I'll pick it up. Yeah. I've also been given a lot of things by really generous artists. And I've bought some things, you know, over the years. I sort of... because of what I like, and I like the things that are produced by emerging artists, they tend to not be that expensive to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, so they're affordable. And I've probably spent more money on art in bars and coffee shops than any other place in town. you know, because that's where in Santa Barbara, if you're an emerging artist, you show your work. Because those venues make their money selling whatever else it is, whether it's coffee or booze, and they can put whatever they want on the wall. Because that's not how they pay their bills.
Yeah.
So that's where I frequently find the stuff that I personally am most drawn to.
Mm.
Like Elsie's. I bought a few things from Elsie's.
Yeah.
Elsie's a good one.
Who are some of your favorites? We don't want to like leave anyone out, but yeah. who do you like? Who are some of your... for someone listening to this
outside Santa Barbara, who should they check out?
You know, I don't have anything about this guy, but one of my favorites is a guy named Danny Meza. He's a tattoo artist, but just a great artist generally. He also works at, I think he's one of the mentors at Youth Interactive. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of his stuff. He's just an incredible draftsman, incredible artist. He's a big deal. Who else? That's a good, really good question. I'm going through like the wheels in my mind and what other drawings and pieces I have in my own collection. One of the people I've been most excited about, and I haven't seen her producing a lot of stuff recently, is a young woman named Inga Getz.
Oh yeah,
and she does stuff with used skateboards, and she does these sculptures that are absolutely amazing. Yeah, of all the people that I've seen come out of Santa Barbara in the last couple of years, I think she has potentially the greatest potential to crank it up and be noticed outside Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. Because it's really interesting stuff. It's totally unique. It's beautiful. It hangs on walls. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do one more.
One more. I only have a really small thing with him, but Ethan Turpin and John Smith have been doing really interesting things together. I've always been a fan of Ethan's, and John sort of become an artist sort of more recently, but the projection work that they've been doing around town is really interesting and beautiful. It's something, they're sort of doing things that you can't collect exactly.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, as somebody who likes to collect, modestly frustrating. It's like, what do I would like that. Can I have that in my house? No.
Yeah.
You can't. But, you can't have the stuff at Burning Man either. So, it's sort of, that's almost something that draws me to it,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they've been doing really great stuff around town. Maybe one other, I'll throw one more in there.
Okay.
Zach Paul.
Oh, Zacharias.
Zacharias Paul. Yes. He's a really, really great artist doing these very interesting abstract work that's very intellectual, which is something that is not an obvious pairing with some abstract work, because some of it's sort of just like let go and turn your mind off and see what comes out. Zach is much more sort of analytical in the way he creates things. And they're very interesting and very beautiful, and I'm a huge fan of his as well.
Alrighty. We'll put links to their work if we can find them.
Yeah, some of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure I could go on. There's so many great artists in town.
Well, obviously we don't want to leave anyone out, especially because we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
No.
But you gotta. I'm gonna stop you at three.
Yeah, and I already went. I already went over. You broke it, so.
Okay. Do you think the summer holds some possibilities for art? You got the Ray Strong thing coming up.
Yeah, the Ray Strong thing will be really fun. So that'll be in June, and there'll be a book that hopefully will be out in June, but at the latest, I think it'll be out in July. Ray Strong, I never met the guy, and I'm really sad I didn't. But he was clearly the most influential Santa Barbara artist of the last 50 years. And even if he didn't create any art, he would still be the most influential, in part because he was such a voracious teacher. He just taught and taught and taught, and he was incredibly generous with his time and his energy. And he, founded the Oak. He was co-founder of the Oak Group. He was co-founder of the Santa Barbara Art Institute, Open Gallery 113, a variety of different other things. And because of him, Santa Barbara is sort of a mecca for planar landscape painting. Like, if you like planar landscape painting, then there's a ton of cachet for Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
Right? Because, this is the place for that. It's one of, there's many places, but this is definitely one of them. And that's mostly because of Ray Strong.
Mm-hmm.
I also really like his work. And so I'm excited because a lot of things that I haven't seen before will be out in public view, so I'll be able to go check them out, and that's always fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about that. Other stuff that's happening this summer, I don't know much about. Lots of it hasn't been announced yet or whatever. It'll come across my desk to put on the blog in a few weeks, maybe 2 months in advance. I'll always be excited for the Funk Zone Art Walks and for First Thursdays. I mean, they're just more fun in the summertime because it's light out and it's warm out.
Mm-hmm.
And so more people are out, and that's always really fun. But I don't have any specifics. Other than the Ray Strong Project, I don't know about any specifics.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, keep tuned to the Santa Barbara Arts blog.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all your updated
Yeah, and I usually put things up not that far in advance. I mean, partially because I'm busy, but like at most they go up like a week in advance. So I'm sort of, you know, reminding you to go to the show, not being like a month out or like mark your calendars.
Mm-hmm.
I'm be like, hey, don't have plans, you know, two nights from now, go to the show at Wall Space Gallery or whatever, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, we'll keep looking at it. Nathan, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
For braving the chilly weather of Santa Barbara to come over here.
It was a blast.
Whew. All right. Cheers.
Thanks.
And there you have it. Another wonderful chat on the Funk Zone podcast. That was Nathan Vonk, ladies and gentlemen, talking at the 404. The 404 Studios, where I live and breathe. Okay. That's it for this week. If you want to check out Nathan's blog, which you should, it's sbartsblog.com. Go check that out, sign up, follow it, put it in your RSS feed. And meanwhile, for myself, yes, there is funkzonepodcast.com. You can go subscribe there. There is tedmills.com, where I share my writing. There is Ted Mills at Twitter, where I share the contents of my brain. And then there's iTunes, where you could go over and subscribe and like and star and give us a thumbs up and a high five and all that business. Okay. Next week, we've got some more cool stuff coming up. We've got some cool guests coming up in the future because I can now see the schedule. Even for the end of this month, I can see we have some pretty cool stuff coming up. So stay tuned. All right, that is it. I am going to leave you now in the capable words of my second grade friend Joseph, who is going to say that thing he says. Okay, sayonara.
And now for a big goodbye. See you soon. We'll make some more tapes later on. Bye. We might make some more tapes later on. Bye. We might make more tapes later on. Yeah. See you soon. Bye.